Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke, and you. We are loaded up, man. So much to talk about. Some black shirts to discuss as the rest of that D got them. What do you think of that as a Nebraska fan? We'll get into the one man who said, I'm good. And a guy that has crawled all the way back to earn a black shirt. Can join us today, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Numbers to get in. Find us and follow us on Twitter, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5, at Hail Varsity. You miss any part of the practice report, Derek Peterson has you covered for that, along with Aaron Sorensen and Greg Smith's just crushing it. A lot of good momentum with recruiting for Nebraska, so always log on to HailVarsity.com. Here's what we got coming up, 15 minutes, Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and Magazine. We got a lot to talk about. Urban Meyer, the assertion that Paul Feinbaum has said this morning that Urban's going to be done after the year. It's not exactly going out on a limb there, but we'll hear from Paul Feinbaum in about 30 minutes. Mitch Sherman's going to be with us. We'll talk some Nebraska football, some Big Ten football, what's going on with Ohio State, all of that good stuff. If we can get a celebrity death match between D'Antonio and Harbaugh, I don't know who I would pick. The easy answer is Harbaugh.
Oh, 100% Harbaugh.
Right? I mean, the easy answer is Harbaugh. He'd probably bite your ear off Tyson style and spit it back on you.
Yeah, he refuses to lose.
No, I know, but the crazy old man Gran Torino clone is at Michigan State.
He just seems too nice of a guy to me.
D'Antonio?
Compared to Harbaugh, like Harbaugh's just like psycho man.
No, you have a quiet like killer in D'Antonio. All right. So, and he's an Ohio State guy.
That's fair.
Right? So, I mean, just, I got to see it at some point. So that's where we'll go after Mitch Sherman. We'll talk some Big Ten. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet in 1 hour. Get his take on things. How long does Brohm last in West Lafayette? That's kind of the next question. I know it's just one win, but you could easily see Purdue finishing 8-4 or better this year. How long does he hang around? We'll talk to Pizzo about that. And then had a chance to talk with Trey Neal. Trey Neal, the transfer from Central Florida. Trey Neal, the starting safety for Nebraska football. Trey Neal, the future dentist. So we sat down with Trey Neal, that conversation coming up. And then we'll have a World Series preview. If time permits, we'll get into crying in the NFL, if that is permitted. And more on Urban Meyer. You can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. Here's Coach Chenander today. And the topic, black shirts, you see it when guys get done and hustle off the practice field. What are they wearing? It's not quite the red carpet, but it could be as guys were donning the black.
Yeah, a couple guys, starters. We want to get all the starters waiting for an opportune time. Obviously, not a good time when you lose a football game, but the guys are learning how to practice, learning what we want out of the defense. This game, not doing their own stuff. Everybody's kind of playing within the defense. So it was a good time to get the starters in the black shirts.
How many times do you hear coaches and see coaches and kind of process body language where you got dudes going rogue? And maybe you are that guy or were that guy on the playground, where it's just like you're getting your butt kicked and pick up basketball or flag football.
So let me take it over by myself.
It's John Wayne time. It's time for me to go John Elway. It's MJ. It's LeBron. It's on me. None of these stiffs can play, so I got to do everything. Because we all have that inner game seven in us. Or fourth quarter or whatever you want to throw out there. That happens in college football, and it screws a defense. It does. It screws your other 10 teammates. 9 times out of 10. The guys do their job. Do they do their job at a high level? And do you play as one unit, right? That's the real... That's why coaches go bald. Coaches go gray. Coaches put on weight. Coaches lose weight. Whatever. Because guys don't stop the temptation of going rogue. And they played together. We'll hear more from Coach Chenander. But two guys I want to spend some time on. Ben Stilley, Lamar Jackson. Who got black shirts today? Lamar Jackson, Trey Neal, Carlos and Khalil Davis. That's 10 of 11. Who said no? Who didn't get one? Ben Stilley. And this was from Coach Frost on the conference call. Ben doesn't think he's been practicing well enough, so he refused it. He said that today post-practice. What do you think of that? What do you think of Stilley's stance on that? And were you expecting Lamar Jackson to get a black shirt in 2018? I said shart. That wasn't intended. Black shirt. First, I'm going to go with Stilley here. Ben Stilley's a Nebraska kid. Ben Stilley's a guy who is a grinder, who will talk but doesn't necessarily have to or like to. He's a throwback. He's a hard worker. He's talented. He's a machine. He has team first in mind. And if he keeps progressing, he could be a good one for Nebraska. He is competent. He is adequate. He's a guy that knows he's got a ways to go, and he's going to keep working. And I really like Ben Stilley. Ben Stilley's a guy you want on your team every year. Ben Stilley's a guy you want on the defensive side of things for this team to move forward. And his attitude represents that culture. You hear about it. Some of you maybe roll your eyes at it. But in all sincerity, you want guys like Ben Stilley on your team because he's got his own standard. He is not being disrespectful. He doesn't think he's practiced as well as he needs to. Maybe he doesn't feel he's performed as well. Maybe he doesn't have the details down. He got a sack, big sack, against Minnesota. It's pretty nice. Ben Stilley says, I'm good. I have more work to do. This isn't to create drama. The only reason it's in the news and we're talking about it because he was still wearing yellow today as he was trying to get to the locker room. He's the one starter that didn't get a black shirt. Okay.
And you mentioned standard. That might not even be a personal thing. It could be holding the rest of the defense to a standard as well, too. You know, that motivates the rest of the guys.
Mm-hmm. No, this is Ben Stilley saying, look, man, I have messed up. I've not done my job, or I haven't done it as consistently as I wanted. I don't deserve it yet. And he's the last guy who wants to be asked about it. He's the last guy who wants to talk about it. Coach Frost said it in the teleconference today. So it's all, this is not a look at me, I'm a martyr. This is Ben Stilley, Nebraska proud, but still thinks he's got a lot of ways to go. This is Ben Stilley that watched Ndamukong Suh in the 09 defense, and that's what he wants to be. And this is Ben Stilley that wants to be better as a pass rusher and against the run defensively. This is Ben Stilley, the guy that is probably pissed off there was 22 points reeled off against this defense. And he's like, that wasn't good enough. The defense has gotten better. The defense has played well enough in stretches to win football games. They've had some collapses. They've had some breakdowns. They've had some issues. But they're not a complete train wreck anymore. And it's a work in progress. We'll get to Lamar Jackson in a minute. Brian's with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Brian, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I honestly think I respect him for not taking it.
Exactly.
That's black shirt spirit right there. I mean, I have complete respect for Ben Stilley, and You know, on a side note, I sharted once, but it was after I hit a deer.
Brian, thank you. I need to learn how to speak better. It's a profession. You say shirt, and you say and shart comes out. What are you supposed to do?
I guess it's better to correct it than just let it slide.
Right? You just get
no pun intended.
You got to own up to it, is what I'm saying. Right? And Brian owned up. I hit a deer. Bad things happened. Let's get into Lamar Jackson. As Coach Chenander asked about Lamar's kind of reemergence, I have a take on Lamar getting a black shirt.
Yeah, same thing with Lamar. He's doing the things off the field we want him to do. You know, embracing the culture that Coach Frost is creating, embracing his job in the defense and some of the technique. You know, one thing we've been focused on him with is he's been in phase a lot of the football games. We've seen a lot of penalties because he's not looking at the ball, not using proper technique. In the past game, he was in phase. He looked for the football. He made plays in the football. So we felt like he's trying to do things the right way. He's improving steadily. We felt like we wanted to get him in one.
He earned it. He got a black shirt, okay? Lamar Jackson is very, very interesting. He's curious. He's a lot of foam with beer that's supposed to taste good, right? And he was your highest-rated recruit out of Elk Grove. You see his measurables. You see his ability. And your mind starts to wonder what could be. And then you see him out there for much of his career just whiffing. And he's kind of turned into a pinata for Nebraska fans. He's turned into a pinata. Dedrick Young's turned into a pinata. And both those guys just keep putting the earmuffs on and keep working. I will dare say this about Lamar Jackson. This is the first time in his life that I think he's been forced to respond. Because I think guys in high school, and I don't know that his childhood slash high school years were the easiest. So kudos to getting to a university, okay? But I think there's a lot of coaches in high school that put up with BS or BS around him because of how talented he is. You don't want to lose a guy like that because in today's climate, kids in California, guess what? They can go to a different high school. And many do. And I think Lamar maybe did. Okay. So Lamar Jackson comes in here. Don't know what he was promised, but played right away and was not ready. Wasn't ready mentally. Wasn't ready physically. Still got thrown out there because you got to showcase your prized SoCal recruit. Right. And it was just a disaster. And things weren't going well this year. Got benched this year. Was that after the Wisconsin game? Was that after the Troy game? This thing's a freaking blur this year. Michigan. It's after Michigan, right? After Michigan, he got benched.
Yeah, I think so.
So right after Michigan, game 3. We're in game 7. So Lamar gets benched, makes his way back, plays very well against Northwestern. Like, looks like a different football player. Let's not go overboard. Like he's all Big Ten. But he looks like he belongs on the field. And then last week, he stacked it, got his spot back for the Northwestern week, stacked it, played really well last week in the win. People threw at him against Northwestern. People threw at him a couple of times last week against Minnesota. And from a technique standpoint, he was right there in coverage, turning around, knocking the football down. Not lost, not in la-la land, not looking overmatched by somebody he's physically more spectacular than. So good for Lamar Jackson. Good for Lamar responding to the challenge of getting benched, coming back. Because I'll be honest with you, man, that's not easy money. That's not a sure bet. Lamar Jackson, from a mentality standpoint, is going to be told an answer he doesn't want to hear. That is no or sit by this staff. But it's some tough love that had to happen, and we'll see where it goes. Now, is Lamar Jackson going to stay on the straight and narrow from a technique standpoint, from an off-the-field standpoint, And I don't want to make it sound like Lamar's a screwball off the field, but based on the comments, there was some more attention to detail that sounds like needed to happen from Lamar, okay? Do you want to be a football player or not? Because you have the skills and the talent to do it. I think, above all, Lamar wants to get the opportunity to play on Sundays. He's got the body type to do it. Does he have the mentality to do it? I think from day one that Nebraska made contact with him, with the previous staff, the previous secondary coach, it's, let's get you to Sundays, son. Get you out of here so you can leave early. I think all of that BS was given to him. And I think he listened to it. And I don't know that he honestly probably earned a starting spot with the old staff, but they gave him one. He was an option to play, yes. Was he a starter? Was he ready? No, he should have redshirted. Didn't. This staff has been real with him. And this staff has been putting in the work with him, and he's put the work in with them. Now he's got to keep this black shirt. He's got to keep this starting position. And Coach Fisher is going to be all over him to do that. So a couple of good stories there. Mitch Sherman's on the way with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Coming up, Trey Neal. Our conversation with the Husker safety, newest black shirt. We say hi to Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine. I don't know if he's wearing a black shirt or not. Mitch, I'm going to say you're wearing a three-quarter zip-up because I love wearing them too. Am I correct?
Yeah, I'm wearing a blue sweatshirt on the road down to Kansas City for some basketball talk tomorrow.
Okay. Good for you.
If that works for you.
No, it does. I mean,
not a black shirt. I turned it down. I got offered a black shirt and said that.
What was your reasoning?
It didn't fit. I don't know. Next time I'll be sure to snap it up.
That's fine. Mitch, hey, I know you're headed to Big 12 basketball media days, so we'll hit a little hoops towards the end of this. What's your take on Ben Stille turning down a black shirt? What's your thoughts on Lamar Jackson kind of climbing the way back from the end of the bench to get a black shirt?
Yeah, they're both interesting stories. I heard that snippet about Stille today, and you know, I don't know the details other than that he said he hadn't practiced well enough. And you like that. You definitely like that kind of attitude in the kid. I think some of the values that Scott Frost is trying to instill in this program are maybe more naturally accepted by a guy like Ben Stille, who's local. Mm-hmm. Not to say that Lamar Jackson or Adrian Martinez or whoever it might be is going to have a difficult time understanding what Scott Frost wants in this program, but I think it's bred into those guys like Ben Stille. And, you know, that's a pretty stand-up move. That's not something I've heard in a quarter century of being around this program pretty closely. Going back to my time in college, I don't ever remember a guy turning down a black shirt. But, you know, these are unique circumstances. He's playing on a 1-6 team, and it's a team that feels good right now because of the way that it played on Saturday. But the fact remains is they haven't had a good year, at least in the way that you typically gauge that kind of, you know, what a good year is. I think they still have time in a non-traditional sense for this to turn out to be a very productive year. And if I'm Ben Stille, or if I'm trying to get inside of his mind and why he's thinking that, you know, I think he's trying to keep that motivation going. He's trying to keep that those wheels turning so that he can send a message to his teammates, and he can also keep himself on the right track to look past what this team's record is, because it's never going to look like a record that great Nebraska teams have had. But they can still accomplish a lot, and I think kind of claim their place in Nebraska history if, you know, great things come after this season. So it's admirable for sure. You know, Lamar Jackson's on the totally opposite end of the spectrum, because I think when people started jumping ship in September and early October, and you had a few guys transfer, and you had a guy get benched who decided to transfer, and you had a guy transfer before the season because he lost a position, I think there were some who probably expected that Lamar Jackson might be a guy who would do something like that because, you know, unfairly to him, because, hey, he's from California, he's from far away, he was a highly rated recruit who probably hasn't lived up to some of the expectations that people had for him. So to see him come back and, you know, come back from a lot of things, come back from, you know, covering the receiver who caught the touchdown to tie the game against Northwestern at the end of regulation, among lots of missteps that this defense has had, I think it's you know, equally admirable that he's climbed the ranks. Equally admirable to the statement that Ben Stille made by turning that thing down.
Mitch Sherman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter, ESPN.com, and magazine. Mitch, what did you sense from Coach Frost, not only Saturday after the win, but even yesterday at the presser as they move forward? They'll pay attention to Bethune-Cookman, but mm-hmm. I think they can ramp up momentum-wise, and who knows where Ohio State's going to be in 10 days, but they're wounded for the first time in a long time, so who knows what Nebraska can bring in. But what type of what sense do you get from Coach Frost as far as from a how pleased he is with where they're at right now? I mean, I know
that's
there's
a real,
they're finally getting that win, but there's more to it.
That's a real intriguing topic about Ohio State and where they're going to be next week. And as the days go on, it becomes more intriguing. So we'll see after Nebraska gets this game past them. I sensed both Saturday a lot of joy and relief and you know, the opportunity to just take a big breath. On Saturday after the game, you'd see it on his face in the videos that came out of the locker room. You know, just a lot of positive feelings in talking to players after the game. You know, there's so many of them, you know, just wore it on their sleeves. The emotions that they felt, not only for themselves but also for Frost to have reached that point. Reach that milestone and as the coach in Nebraska. And you know, I think by Monday they're making every attempt to turn the page and move forward, and I think they are. And, this game is – Nebraska's not at a point in the progression of its program, even after that win Saturday, where it can train through a game and, you know, just worry about only – I mean, you worry about yourself, but you got to worry about the opponent, too. I don't care if they're FCS level. Bethune-Cookman's not having a terrible year. They're not a horrible team. You know, they can – if Nebraska reverts back to some of the things that plagued it at times this season, they can get into a game with Bethune-Cookman, and that's not the step that you want to see this week. You want to see Nebraska this week come out and take advantage – of the advantages that it has and show that it is the more athletic team and the deeper team and the stronger team and put a bunch of points up on the board in the first half and then allow some of your guys like Noah Vedral, who hasn't been able to get into a game this year, get in there, and Andrew Bunch, get in there and give Adrian Martinez and some of the other frontline players a rest as they get ready for Ohio State. So that's the objective, and I think Nebraska's focused on the right thing.
Mitch, based on what you saw from Nebraska's performance this past Saturday, what would you say is a realistic expectation for how this team can finish out the rest of the season?
Well, I don't want to get into counting wins because we tried to do that before the year, and that can make you look pretty foolish. So it's the same team. You know, it's not like, okay, now they got that win in the win column and everything's normal and you can go, well, check here, check there, check there. You know, whether they win three games or four games or five games, Scott Frost is right, and I fully believe that he believes this when he says that they never were going to measure what constituted a success this season by the number of games that they won. So whether Nebraska goes out and beats Illinois and beats Michigan State and beats Iowa, that's important. It's important to win games. It's always important to win games. But the most important thing for this team is to just continue to be in a better spot. Every week, just be in a better spot so that when they get to the end of November, they can feel good about where they got from the end of August until the day after Thanksgiving. And if they feel good about that, then whether they have 3 wins or 4 wins or 5 wins, you know, I don't think anybody's going to be all too caught up in that, you know, as they push forward into the offseason.
Mitch, got about 4 minutes here. A thought on Purdue, Ohio State, and I was watching some video on ESPN and Paul Feinbaum going out there, October 23rd, saying that he thinks Urban will be done at the end of the year, possibly some health issues, the burnout, the stress. In Ohio State's a mess. There's some issues going on with him and Gene Smith. That's been reported. What's your take, man? I know it looks bleak. Ohio State's not supposed to lose ever, and they lost by a ton on a big stage.
Yeah, there's a lot of smoke around Columbus right now, and you have to kind of parse it all out and figure out. And I think that'll take care of itself over the next 2 months. What's real there, and what's just the snap reaction to Ohio State losing like that? I mean, you know, there was some of this a year ago after Ohio State was blown out at Iowa, but it's more combustible right now because of everything that happened in August. And because of the doubts that some people had that Ohio State was going to recover and just bounce back from that scandal the way that it did, that controversy the way that it did. And the moment Ohio State lost a game, whether it was at Penn State by 3 points or at Purdue by 29, you know, I think some of this stuff was going to come up. Some of the stuff about division on the staff and how these guys don't see eye to eye and how they're how Urban has hired his friends and how it's Florida all over again. Yeah, I think it was inevitable that it was all going to come up. And I think people at Ohio State, you know, talk about Nebraska taking a breath after the win over Minnesota. I think people at Ohio State have to take a breath, people around the program, and, you know, realize that this is still a team that can win the Big Ten and still a team that can go to the college football playoff. So it's not going to happen if they don't have their resources collected and everybody aiming in the same direction. It may not happen even if they do that, but I think that there's a lot of validity to the things that people like that Paul Feinbaum and others are saying about real questions with where Ohio State goes after this season. It's not going to be a surprise if Urban's time is short there, whether it's after this year or next year. You know, he's just a guy wherever he's been, certainly when he was at Florida, you know, who just burns really bright. And he's not a guy, I don't think, who's built to be, you know, a Tom Osborne of this generation. So, you know, he coached somewhere for 25 years. He's shown in his career that's not really who he is. So, is his time coming to an end at Ohio State? I don't know. I don't think that Saturday night in West Lafayette provided a real clear answer to that. But I think these next 5 games will possibly shed some pretty good light.
Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, I know you're headed down to Kansas City. I've got about 20 seconds. What are you going to be working on down there in KC?
Well, it's Big 12 Media Day, so it's all about Bill Self tomorrow. You know, he hasn't had the chance to speak out since some of the testimony came out in the trial last week and the week before in New York. And everybody's going to want to hear what he has to say about the accusation. You know, they haven't been proven guilty of anything, but there's some people under oath who've said some things about Kansas that are pretty damning. So we'll see, and it'll be interesting, I think, to hear what some of the other coaches have to say, too, about getting their doors blown off every year by a program that's now squarely accused of doing it in a suspect kind of way. So I'm interested to hear what Bruce Weber says, what Lon Kruger says, some of the more respected voices in the Big 12 about this scandal or controversy at Kansas, because I don't really expect there's going to be a ton of insight from Bill Self. I think he's probably going to have a statement and then rest on that.
Mitch, thanks so much, man. Safe travels, and we'll talk next week. Appreciate you.
All right. Good to talk to you. Thanks. Right.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. You might have noticed that soybean sign in your neighbor's field this year. It's AgriGold. Our customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct to their farm. The AgriGold way, with high expectations for every seed that goes into the ground. And our approach to soybeans, no different. High performance soybeans from a brand you already know. For more info, visit AgriGold.com. Awesome stuff from Mitch Sherman. You'll be able to find that on the ESPN Lincoln Twitter handle, also on Hale Varsity. And some of Mitch's thoughts will be tweeted out for you. You can check the podcast, HaleVarsity.com, as well. Rick Pizzo coming up. Husker safety and newest black shirt, Trey Neal, will join us in less than an hour. And a World Series preview from the one and only Danny, the Pride of Chicago, Burke, or Casino Danny. We'll talk about the matchup, and then we'll talk about the matchup out in the desert. Before we get into some comments, anybody try the avocado toast diet? Here's the realization. My wife, and my wife throws her voice to mimic the dog talking smack to me. And let's just say the dog asked me when my baby was due. Something's got to change. I know I'm working out. I just need to do it more regularly.
I need to start eating avocado toast.
I have changed my life a lot. I don't want to make any like horrible accusations here, but like I had a bottle in my mouth every night. But I don't like drink during the week. I don't. Monday through Friday. Maybe some Fridays, but Monday through Thursday, I'm not having a beer or a bourbon. I mean, so you hit 40 and...
But are you drinking like pops and stuff?
No, I just drink coffee and water, usually.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's what I do, too.
As big as the boiler's gotten, where you put on jeans and the jeans are screaming.
Just a little extra warmth for the winter.
Yeah, but I don't need that. I got an extra sweater.
All right,
but
a nice little headrest for your wife.
Yeah, she hates me. So my question here is, have you fired this up before? The avocado toast?
Absolutely not. No.
You hate avocado?
No, I'm fine with avocado. I just don't have it with my toast.
You seem offended.
No, it's just, I just wouldn't imagine you. It's an avocado toast type of guy.
No, the reason, I've Googled, right, and avocado, mm-hmm. and my mother told me this weekend, that it's good for burning belly fat.
Sure.
Not a subtle little hint from Joe Mama. You know, avocado is good for stomachs. Nah, thank you. What are you saying? Then she started throwing food at me, Cheetos. So that's why I just brought it up. It's supposed to burn belly fat.
Well, you'll have to let us know.
I'm gonna try and go on an avocado bender here. Urban Meyer, Paul Feinbaum. Paul Feinbaum is doing his best, Mr. Burns, excellent right now, because he believes Urban Meyer's done.
I'm hearing a lot of whispers that this will be Urban Meyer's final season in Columbus. And you go back to August with the controversy over Zach Smith. You talked about Gene Smith, the tension between them. You saw it at that press conference. You also know by now, as everyone, that a member of the Board of Trustees wanted more severe punishment and ended up resigning. That was before the season started. And of course, Urban missed the first couple of games. And since he's been back, Ohio State had won until Saturday night, coming from behind to beat Penn State, but they have not looked good. Urban Meyer's demeanor on the sidelines has been curious. He has complained several times of headaches. And having covered Urban Meyer at the University of Florida, Kate, this looks like a rerun. It looks like deja vu. Urban Meyer walked away down there when the pressure got too much, and I believe he'll do the same thing at the end of the season here.
Do you buy that? Do you think he walks away at the end of the year? I think if Nebraska can go in and win, or say Nebraska goes in and just make some sweat, things still aren't better. They just beat a team that's in transition and not as good. So be it. If Harbaugh dismantles them, I don't think Michigan State's in a good enough spot. Maybe they beat Ohio State this year. Maybe they don't. You know, Ohio State's a mess. I should say the bigger mess is Michigan State, because they're just all over. Their offense is bad, and they have a good enough line, okay? So there's at a minimum two more losses. And you know Harbaugh is going to open that can of, you know what, if he can. And they're playing great ball. And Ohio State's offense is a mess, and I know we're talking to the end of the year, but Michigan would love to just send him out on a gurney. Does he step away? I mean, it's not 8-5 Florida, arrests and dysfunction, but I think him and Gene Smith would probably like to rip each other's head off. More so Gene Smith to Urban Meyer for Urban's arrogance. So we'll see. He may just chill.
I never really thought about it that much if he
because
was
they
quit
probably
or whatever,
named
but.
Who was the dude who was his interim? Right?
It wasn't Shiano. They didn't let it be Shiano.
Right. But it's this young guy that did a good job.
Yeah.
It's like the team has gone to hell all of a sudden with him coming back, aside from the Penn State win.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out Penn State's not that good. They're good, but they're not Penn State money like the last 2 years.
Right, right. So, no, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at this point. It wouldn't surprise me if Ohio State kind of tried to push him out the door. I mean, it just seems like it keeps getting worse, especially like social media-wise. Like, the internet's undefeated, and it's just going to be keep trolling, yeah, and bad for the university recruiting and everything around that nature.
More from around the Big Ten. Here's Jim Harbaugh on Michigan State. He has not let this thing die and didn't at his press conference.
When you host a team, you know, both teams, you share the field. I mean, each has a sideline. Each gets half of the field to warm up on. And Michigan State locked arms and used every inch of the field in their walk with the attempt of, you know, going through or over our guys in a physical manner. So, to call that unsportsmanlike or to call that Bush League is putting it mildly.
He's cranked up about this. Here's what I think happened. I hate that I'm siding with Captain Khakis, but I think his dudes were out on the field warming up. Michigan State does their arm lock thing and walk, and then they tried to run over some Michigan guys. So what happened? Devin Bush came out onto the field and retaliated because Michigan State tried to intimidate Michigan.
I don't blame Devin. I like the way our guys handled it. I mean, that'd be like going back and saying, oh, look at Devin Bush. Look at him out there. You know, he's out of midfield scraping up the logo after what just took place. I mean, that's straight out of the Pistons playbook, you know, do something to them, say something to them, you know, elbow them. And then when somebody else does something, you know, back, then flop.
So the old Bill Laimbeer Rodman playbook where you've been shot from a tower after kidney punching somebody when the ref isn't looking. Well, we'll see if D'Antonio and or Urban are around for 2019. It's been a very up and down year for both. They don't need to be worried about being fired. They just may be done with it. Wore out.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke. We'll talk World Series here next hour. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. Trey Neal is coming up. Husker Safety, the laws of physics apply to you when you're in a vehicle and your body's traveling the same speed as that vehicle, even though you're just sitting on your butt. And when that vehicle stops abruptly, you're going to crash, and your body's going to continue in motion. Something has to stop that motion, and airbags aren't enough. Your seatbelt, though, can save you. What do you want to stop your momentum? The seatbelt or the windshield? And seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and your body need to slow down in a hurry. Buckle up for safety. Buckle up now. Click it or ticket. Whether you're in the driver's seat, the passenger seat, or the back seat, a message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Good stuff from Mitch Sherman. We went around the Big Ten with some thoughts from Jim Harbaugh and Urban Meyer last segment. Nebraska And this is one thing that you can see getting better from the defense, and that is the gap plays. And this isn't safety comes up for run fit gap or A gap, B gap, C gap. No. This is game-altering plays. And Nebraska's defense and special teams made a couple of them on Saturday when things were a little bit tight.
Every single one, you know, like the screen, Trey Neal chased it down too. The thing is, I know you guys hear NFLs talk about gap plays, game-altering plays, right? We don't know when one's going to happen. Eric Lee chases that thing down. They get the ball on the 12 instead of a score. We go first down. They get 2 yards. Second down, we get an interception. That's a game-altering play. And so his effort put us in a position to make that play, and that can't be overlooked, whether it's defense, whether it's offense, whether it's special teams. One of the best plays I saw out there, and I don't even know if it got reviewed on film, just from the sideline, was Maurice got tackled from behind. He was kind of holding the ball out there, and he was going down. Stanley Morgan saw it, kind of wrapped him up, and ushered him to the ground. That stuff right there is championship football. That stuff, that's huge. Not letting it get a fumble when somebody's in a bad position. Not letting it score when it could easily score. So I think that's a huge play for us.
It is. And you think about it, and Lee hustling to make that play. It's first and 10 of the 13. Diedrich gets the interception off of the Boodle tip, and it's okay. Right? You're up 36-22, and your defense makes a play. Or your defense is up 17, and they hold on fourth. I mean, Nebraska responded once it got to 28-22 with 11 straight points. Two-point conversion, field goal. You get a stop in the red zone. You get an interception in the red zone. Ball game. That's big. Let's get qualified right now. Nebraska-Iowa Black Friday giveaway November 9th. Caller 8 and 9 now.
Worse? How could they get any worse? We're at the threshold of hell!
Is this heaven?
It's Iowa.
The jolliest bunch of fools this side of the nut house.
Hey, you know, America loves points.
Yes, they do, Dirty Bob. And just let that soak in. America loves points. Bob Diaco. Caller 8, caller 9 qualifies for Nebraska-Iowa Black Friday giveaway with ESPN Lincoln. You get gas, you get hotel, you get tickets to the game, you get a Jet Splash car wash certificate to wash the Iowa off, and you get the hookup from T.O. Haas Tire. You can log on, ESPNLincoln.com. Find out more info, but caller 8 and 9 now qualify November 9th and giveaway. Here comes Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet next with Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back into it. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Big Ten Buffet time with Mr. Rick Pizzo of the Big Ten Network at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Rick, how's your Tuesday, brother?
My man, I think like the rest of the college football world, I'm still wrapping my head around the fact that Purdue didn't just beat Ohio State. They basically did what Iowa did to the Buckeyes a year ago, kept the Buckeyes out of the playoff in 2017. You have to wonder now, even if Ohio State wins out, does this become a repeat of what occurred last year? I know this Purdue team is good, but man, a lot of questions right now being asked in Columbus.
There are, and let's stay in Columbus, as Urban Meyer at his press conference today. He was asked if there was tension between him and Gene Smith, if there was tension within the coaching staff. According to Ohio State, no, things are all good. That said, you had both the coordinators, offensive and defensive, stay in Sunday to try and correct some issues. Secondary's not been playing well. Offensive line's been a problem for Ohio State. Those two coordinators did not go out on the road recruiting. What's your take on this, man? You're around the league, and we knew it was going to be interesting this year after the suspension.
Chris, listen, here's the deal. Winning, and I hate to say this, it doesn't solve everything. It doesn't make everything all right. It doesn't erase bad things that have been done by individuals, by teams, but it masks all of that. And when you are winning, and Ohio State was winning, everything was very quiet outside of the football field because everybody's happy. Because you're up to number two in the country, because you are on the direct path to Indianapolis in the Big Ten championship game and probably the college football playoff. Now, when things go sour and you are playing under something of a cloud, and I think that's a fair statement to make this year with Ohio State based on what happened preseason, it becomes illuminated. Any issues that may be on the surface, they don't just break through the surface, they erupt. And I think that's what's happening here. Is there as much tension as is being reported on between Gene Smith and Urban Meyer and the rest of the coaching staff? Honestly, probably not. Is there some? Honestly, probably there is. I think that would be understandable based on what happened at the beginning of the year. I think it is absolutely the right move for those coordinators to remain on site, even though Ohio State doesn't play this week. I think it's basically sending a message to say, as Urban Meyer said in the post-game press conference, our weaknesses were exposed, and they were thoroughly exposed. And the scary thing, Chris, you watched this team just like I did. Even in winning, you saw some of those weaknesses. You saw the offensive line struggle. You saw the defensive secondary struggle. So to not be able to fix that for a game that everybody knew was going to be really hard going to West Lafayette, I think that is a big-time concern.
You knew what needed to be done, and you still couldn't stop it, and that is, and it's, you nailed it, man. It is masking some of the warts you may have, right? And listen, Ohio State's in that rarefied air where they can't lose a game, or they can lose a game, but it's got to be to the right opponent. And you can't lose in that fashion to Purdue, as good as they're playing and as nice as they are. And they're a team that's gotten better. I mean, we both think Purdue's pretty solid. A year ago, Iowa just dismantles you after you come back against Penn State. You have two of the blue bloods right now, and Penn State and Ohio State really struggling. The difference is Penn State found a way to survive at Indiana. We'll get into their matchup with Iowa, but listen, man, it's just not as easy to reload, even though Penn State and Ohio State have made it look easy for many years. There is a year where you got to kind of reset, and both those programs don't get a chance to do that. They're expected to go 11-2 every year at worst.
They are, and I would even add Wisconsin to that mix now, right?
Yes.
And the Badgers are having a little bit of a step back this year. They're not playing the kind of Wisconsin football that we've been accustomed to over the last couple of years. I hope everyone realizes, and I am not a Nick Saban fan, but I hope everyone realizes how hard it is to do what Alabama is doing. They are making every week and every year look easy. You can almost pencil them in right now to every major, whether it's the college football playoff, whether it's the SEC championship game. That is almost impossible to do. Look at Urban Meyer's winning percentage. It is ludicrously good. And yet folks still wonder, why is there only one national championship? What happened in the college football playoff against Clemson? How did Iowa take place? How did Purdue happen the very next year? Because it's college football, and these are 18 to 20-year-old young men who are going to make mistakes, because that is the nature of college athletics. And I'm not making excuses for Ohio State. They were not properly prepared in that game. They were not ready for what Purdue had to throw at them, and there is no excuse for that. I am not making excuses. I am just saying that I hope people realize that is the nature of the sport. Unless you are Alabama, it happens to everybody every single season.
You have a run, and then you have a dip down where you got to kind of build back up, and we'll see how Ohio State moves forward. Rick Pizzo's with us, Big Ten Network, at BTN, Rick Pizzo on Twitter. So let's talk Nebraska for a second. Your reaction to the win against Minnesota, what wowed you, and what's Nebraska in for in 2 weeks when they go to Columbus?
Yeah, nothing really wowed me because I believe that was the W. I really did. The matchup, it was the right matchup. Minnesota had come off kind of the moral victory against Ohio State. Nebraska was so close against Northwestern. And you just looked at what Minnesota has, or more to the point, doesn't have right now in their secondary. No Antoine Winfield, so banged up in their back seven. And I just felt like Nebraska was going to be able to take advantage of that by testing the outside early and then get to the run game. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, Ezigbo busts two early runs, and then everything is wide open. So kudos to Scott Frost and the staff for recognizing that. And one of the biggest keys to being a good coach and winning games is taking advantage of your opponent's weaknesses. And I think that's exactly what Nebraska did in that game. It's a walkover against Bethune-Cookman this weekend, and so you got two in the win column, and then you get back to big-time football in November. Again, I don't think that you look at that Ohio State game. I know you're playing every game to win, and I know coaches and Coach Frost would probably tell me to get the hell out of the room if I was saying this in a room that he was also sitting in. I don't necessarily think you're playing that game to win. You always are playing to win, but your main goal coming out of a game against a team like Ohio State is to prove to your team that you can compete and to prove to the guys who will return to this team next year that not only can you compete, but maybe in the next year or two, this program can be built into a consistent winner. I'm not saying they can't win the game. I just got done saying the crazy things happen every year. Of course they could. I don't expect them to. If they did, it would be a massive feather in the cap. But you have to avoid doing what a team like Rutgers has done this year. You can't take huge step backwards and show up against good teams and simply not play the same sport. That's what Nebraska has to avoid this week, or next week, I should say, against a really talented, even though they're disappointed, Ohio State team, who, by the way, will also be rested and as healthy as they've been in a couple of months.
Yeah, and they'll be looking to take out some fury on whoever that next opponent would be. It happens to be Nebraska. Rick Pizzo's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Rick, what's your gut tell you about Brohm and Purdue? Is he there for an extended period, or is this a nice 2-3 year run and then someone big, really big, comes and poaches him? Because he's incredible. He is a big time coach.
He's an amazing play caller. He is a guy who has that rare ability to be both remarkably intense but still likable, according to his players. He's still a player's coach, even though he is in their grill. I mean, he gets as angry and as frustrated and as fired up as anybody that you'll see in the country. To answer your question, I think he is recruiting for the future. When you recruit a guy like Rondale Moore, who passed over Alabama and others to go to Purdue, then you are clearly selling the program in the right way. Now, can I guarantee that he's going to be there for the duration? Of course not. Nobody can. I mean, Louisville, you would think, after they get rid of the absolute disaster that was Bobby Petrino Part 2, is going to back up a Brinks truck to West Lafayette and do everything they possibly can to get Jeff Brohm to go back to his hometown school. I don't think that he would do that. I know the allure is there. I know the recruiting in the ACC is there. I know winning in the ACC is probably easier than winning in the Big Ten right now. All that being said, there is something building. There is momentum that West Lafayette hasn't felt since Joe Tiller's prime years, and that's pretty special. When Ross Ade gets rocking, I mean, if you go back to the years of Drew Brees and the years that this team was competing, a really fun place on a college football Saturday. And you have to remember, they're in the West.
Yeah.
I mean, you can win the West right now. If Wisconsin continues to take a step back, why can't Purdue be the best team in that division within the next year or two? They'll be battling with Wisconsin. They'll be battling with Nebraska. Maybe a battle with Northwestern. There's no reason, and Iowa, of course, as well, there's no reason that Purdue can't be the best team in the West and back to Indianapolis in a year or two. Jeff Brohm knows that. I think that is a big selling point for him to stay.
Watch the West rise up. I mean, Northwestern's always dangerous. Wisconsin's been the standard. Iowa is really good this year, and they're good most years. If Nebraska gets their act together, and it looks like they're going to, right? It's just a matter of time. And yep. then you have Brohm and Purdue. I mean, that's really nice for the league, because the East is already the East. That's just one hell of a league.
But the East, you know what, Chris? The East is top-heavy, right? I mean, the East right now is really top-heavy. And you go from the top four, and then, no offense to Maryland and Indiana and Rutgers, but there is a precipitous drop-off. Right now, you look in the West, the depth and the parity in the West makes it a really intriguing league. I mean, Illinois still has a chance to go to a bowl game this year. I don't think they'll get there, but they have an opportunity, so they're making at least a small step. Purdue looks like a completely different team than the team that they were in the first three games of the year. Northwestern, by the way, is leading the West, in case anybody wants to look at the standings, if you go statistically and head-to-head. You have Wisconsin, who, you know, is still Wisconsin, does Wisconsin things. Yeah, I think the West, you can make an argument, is certainly not as good as the East, because you are ultimately judged by your best teams. But top to bottom, you could absolutely make the argument it is the more intriguing and deeper from 1 to 6 league than the East is.
Absolutely. What's your take here on the Michigan-Michigan State hijinks that happened?
You know, I'm torn. I really am. I think that Devin Bush was looking for it. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. That's who he is. That's how he feeds. That's what motivates him. I also think that there are players on Michigan State who are looking for it. I don't think anybody was in the right here. I think there were a lot of individuals and a lot of programs in the wrong. And I think, unfortunately, right now, you know, the Michigan-Michigan State rivalry is somewhat akin to politics right now in this country. Everybody's throwing mud at each other. You know,
well done.
It is this guy is bad, and then that guy says, no, you're bad, wrong. You know, we're going to build a wall between Ann Arbor and East Lansing. Say whatever you want about the political relationship. But to me, that's what it is. And at the end of the day, rivalries are great. When they get nasty and when they become basically uncivil, I think it's bad for the sport. And people will say, oh, you're like the old man yelling at the clouds. I'm not. Rivalries can be really good, and there can be a healthy respect in both team and individual sports. It's harder in team sports because you have more moving parts. But I think it's up to the head coaches. And I think it's I love Chase Winovich. He's a great player. But he brings back the little brother comment after the win on Saturday. You know, your program's still 3-8 against little brother over the last 11 tries. So I understand you wear the crown. You have the Paul Bunyan Trophy this year. And at the same time, then, you know, Mark D'Antonio has some things to say as well. Hey, listen, leave it on the field, and we'll judge it year by year. I don't like where it's going. I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's good for the sport. I may be in the minority. I think there is a way to have rivalries and do it in a civil fashion.
Rick, I'm going to rapid fire three of the matchups this weekend. Purdue at Michigan State. Does Purdue keep momentum?
Boy, I got to think so right now. Michigan State right now is having a ton of trouble stopping the run, and I think that Knox is a really good running back. Michigan State was one of the best run defenses in the country until last week. Michigan tore them up. Purdue is on a roll. You got to like the Boilermakers, even on the road. Though I'll say, again, every time you count out Michigan State, they're the team that comes back to win those kind of games.
How about Northwestern? They do well in Evanston against Wisconsin.
Man, they really do. I mean, it all comes down to their line. I mean, if they can hold their own on the line, they should have an advantage throwing the football down the field, because right now Wisconsin's secondary is a disaster with injuries and inconsistency, but Thorson has to have time to throw the football. Otherwise, Wisconsin gets it and they don't give it back. They possess the ball for 40 minutes and they win playing the Wisconsin way.
Penn State and Iowa. Can't wait to see this one.
Yeah, I think this is going to be really fun. I think Iowa's offense is remarkably underrated. I think Nate Stanley has done a terrific job. Kirk Ferentz, in my mind, is probably number two right now in Big Ten Coach of the Year voting behind Jim Harbaugh. This is going to be a great game. I'm not ready to pick a winner yet in this one, because I think this is probably going to be the best game of the weekend. But don't be surprised if we see both teams here up in the 30s or 40s. I know that it's atypical of Iowa, but that's the way they can play right now. And if they have to outscore Penn State to win, I think that Iowa actually has the pieces to do that in 2018.
Rick, we'll get caught up again, man. Thanks for the time.
Chris, as always, my pleasure, buddy. Enjoy the week.
Gotta love the buffet with Mr. Pizzo. We'll talk to a new black shirt about safety and transfer, Trey Neal. Our conversation with him next on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
A few minutes here on Hail Varsity Radio. Safety Trey Neal with us. Trey, thanks for a few minutes. How was Saturday? What was it like for you?
Oh, man, it was exciting. You know, just seeing, you know, a lot of people they would leave a game when you're up 53 to, 28, because the game's over. But, that place was packed like it was the first quarter kickoff, and I think that just speaks volumes to the fan base here. It was exciting just to be in that environment, to see the first win with Coach Frost and see how excited the fans were, and even my teammates, just to see how excited they were.
What stuck out to you as you walked off? I mean, I know it was full, and I know it was loud. You being a guy that's new here, mm-hmm. I mean, what did you notice? What sights and sounds?
The excitement level. After a game, you would think you're just going to get, claps, good job. But these people were screaming like I said, like it was the first quarter that we were about to kick off. That's the excitement level. I think that caught me off guard a little bit, jogging out through the tunnel when we were leaving and just hearing them screaming and yelling like we had just came out. I think that was the craziest thing I saw.
A lot of folks in that locker room look to you because of your knowledge, your experience. You're a teacher, and that responsibility's been something that you've embraced, but also, is it fair to say the coach has asked you to pay it forward from knowing the scheme? How's that been for you to be able to be accountable and get this group, these guys in the secondary, playing at a high level while also kind of keeping your own ability at a high level?
It's fun. I've always, since I was a freshman, I never thought that, I'd be the guy that everybody leans on. I've always known that I know a lot of stuff about defense and, stuff like that, but I never thought ever that I would be, people will come up and talk to me, ask me about something. But, it's fun just being able to be in those shoes. It's rare that you're able to be a leader on the team and have people ask you so many questions while also being able to have to keep uphold yourself and do what you're supposed to do. But, it's fun for me. I get to pass on some knowledge to some of the young guys that maybe they don't understand it now or maybe they don't see it now. But, even if I just speak it to them and they'll remember it, when they get in my shoes one day, they'll be like, wow, I see what Trey was talking about, 3, 4, 5 years later. I think that's just kind of a cool, kind of unique thing.
Trey Neal with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Take me through your decision-making process to leave Central Florida, blowing up. You guys still haven't lost down there. Yep. To relocate and follow this staff. I mean, I know you've been asked about it, and I know you've talked about it, but I haven't had a chance to ask you. And that's a giant leap of faith on your end, because you're starting, your fourth leading tackler. Yep. It's not like you weren't playing. You were performing well.
Yes, sir. It was one of those things where, I had to weigh my football future with my future for the next 40 years. I've always had aspirations to play in the NFL, but, that's something that, if I would have gotten hurt down there, say I tear my ACL, I didn't want to be in a situation where I'm just wasting my time as far as, schooling goes. Because, I grew up in a family where that was the most important thing in the household, was academics. So it was one of those things where once I realized I was going to graduate in the summer, I knew I'd have a semester, maybe even two semesters to be able to go after, and get into a program or lead up to get me into a program, which is why I came up here, was for dental school. A lot of people don't know that, but, UCF doesn't have a dental school right now. So I didn't want to sit there and waste, a semester or two just taking classes I wouldn't need ever. So I came up here. I asked Coach Frost, would you guys be willing to have me, first of all? And then he said, yeah. So once I kind of realized they had a dental school up here, it was an easy choice to come up here.
What is it about dentistry?
I don't know. Initially, I wanted to be an anesthesiologist, but the hours it's just outrageous. I mean, you can be in there all day, all night. And, I'm a big family guy also, so I want to come home, talk to my wife, talk to my kids about how their day was, watch them play football and baseball and basketball on the weekend. So that's where I kind of got with the dentistry. You can kind of control your own hours, be open when you want. So that's where I kind of got that. My mom worked in the ER, so I'm plenty used to seeing around blood, around teeth, all that kind of crazy stuff. So that's nothing new. So, that's where it comes from.
Tell me a little bit about your family background. You said your mom, ER, expand on that a little bit. And dad, family, their influence on you academically and from a sports standpoint, too. What do you remember since being 2 feet tall? Their words to you about both sides of it?
We're a big sports family. I played, I remember growing up, I played football, basketball, and baseball. So, throughout the whole year, I'm active. I'm doing school and football and baseball. So we're at the park all day. I got two brothers and a little sister that I little sister's really little, but, you know, I had two brothers that were raised around me. So my mom and dad, they're at the field all day. I mean, I'm talking from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. just, you know, being around sports and their kids watching it. So, you know, but it was one of those things where, you know, if our grades weren't right or if we were acting up in school, you know, we're not playing football on Saturdays. And, you know, it only took one time for all of us to be like, we got a game. We tell them, we got a game. We got to go to the game. They're like, nope, you're not going. You acting up in class. And we're like, okay, yeah, right, you're not going to make us miss a game. But when we actually miss the game, you know, we're little, so we're over here booing, crying, begging. So I think it's just one of those things where after that, that was it. So, you know, we knew we had to act right in class and get our grades. And I think that kind of having that development and having that influence, it inspires, you know, that's why all of us know that academics is the most important thing.
What'd you do in school to miss the game?
I'm a big laughing guy, so, you know, anytime somebody did something funny, I wasn't a kid that could be able to hold in my laugh and just giggle low. I would laugh out loud, and the teacher would get mad and think I was the one doing it, but, you know, so I would have to turn my card over from yellow to red, and, you know, that means you have to call your parents and all that, so that was my big issue. My brothers was kind of the same way. We're big laughing guys. We love to laugh, so that was what it was.
Well, there's a lot of smiles after the win against Minnesota. A couple of thoughts on that game. It got tight 28-22. Defense steps up, gets the ball back. And how are you feeling in that moment? You're on the field where Minnesota's got some momentum. How did you turn it? And then let's fast forward to that locker room where Coach Frost gets the game ball. Mm-hmm. A guy and a staff you know really well. What was going through your mind with both of those instances?
You know, they scored that second touchdown, and it was 28-22. And I'm just like, all right, you know, somebody's got to make a play. You know, defense, we got to step up. You know, and guys like Mo Berry, Mick over there, even though he wasn't playing, he was still talking us up. You know, just helping us, you know, having that positive influence on the sideline is big. You know, at times, you know, we can argue, we can complain at each other, but, you know, it's one of those things where we're like, all right, guys, let's get a stop right here. Let's start making some plays. And then, you know, once we do that, get the offense back the ball, we got to swing this momentum. And I think once we did that, I think that's where it started getting out of hand. And that's, I think, that positive, you know, that positivity that Mick was bringing to the sideline was a big thing. As far as after the game, you know, it was exciting. I mean, this was the first time I saw guys running in the locker room waiting to, you know, see what was Coach Frost going to say. You know, for the past 6 weeks, he was just saying, you know, he felt bad for us. He was heartbroken for the way that some of these games ended. But, you know, we were all in there dancing and having fun. And then once he got in here, it was even more of a party. You know, we got a little quiet for him to talk a little bit. But then once the game ball got handed out, you know, it was huge celebration. So, you know, it was a very good environment, and it was fun in there.
What impresses you about Coach Frost from a leadership standpoint? Because you spent time up front talking about how it might have been wearing on him, mm-hmm. the not having a win here. He played here. He grew up here.
Yeah.
He bleeds Nebraska. Yeah. That's what he is. Mm-hmm. But what has he passed on to you that you'll take with you for a while?
You know, just the importance of family, you know. Football aside, you know, sports aside, you know, family is all that you really have. That's the constant throughout your life. You know, I think that's one of the things he preaches the most is, you know, these brothers, you know, yeah, we play football, but we're making memories for a lifetime. You'll never forget these guys. And even outside of that, you know, he preaches to the coaches even, you know, bring your family up here, bring them around the facilities because you're up here all day. You know, they just want to hang out with their dad and, you know, their kids probably just want to hang out with their dad and talk to their dad, you know. So just bring them up here if you can't, you know, got to stay up at the office. Just bring them up here. And you know, that's different. You know, sometimes coaches like no family up here, nobody up here, no relatives, anything like that. But he wants their kids to come up here and talk to the coaches. He wants them to be around their players just to see. And I think that's big. And I think that's probably the biggest thing I'll take away is, you know, the importance of family within, you know, different dynamics.
Last thought here, Trey, and thanks for a few minutes with us. What attribute or trait I think makes you most proud of the secondary that you see the corners, the safeties playing with right now? What and the growth? I mean, just what's one or two things that you're like, man, these guys get it. I'm happy for them. Yeah. in your performance as well. I mean, it's been at a high level also.
I think. You know, I know a lot of people said that this group was a bunch of quitters, and, you know, I haven't seen it. You know, even when for example, when we were down in Michigan, a big lead, guys were still out there, you know, this is our last name. We're going to go out there. We're going to play like a 0-0. And that speaks volumes of the kind of people they are. Yeah, you know, we might get beat sometimes. We might not have the best of days, but, you know, we're always going to rebound from it. And we're always going to keep fighting. You know, you're never going to see us giving up. You won't see us, you know, quitting on our teammates. We're gonna fight till it's 0-0, whether we're up by 50 points or we're down by 50 points. And I think that's the biggest thing that I appreciate from these guys the most is that you don't have guys, you know, that are like, oh, I don't want to play anymore. You know, we're losing this much. I don't want to play anymore. Or even if we're winning, they're like, oh, I want to keep going. You know, I think that's the biggest thing that I've seen from these guys.
Trey Neal with us on Hail Varsity. Trey, best to you. Thanks for a few minutes.
Thank you. No problem.
Good stuff from Trey. Good conversation on the aspirations to be a dentist. And if you're a black shirt, you're supposed to knock some teeth out, and then he can put them back in, right? Trey Neal, a member of the black shirts now. That revelation today, as 10 of the 11 starters on defense are black shirts, including Trey Neal. Ben Stille wants to be better in practice before accepting a black shirt. 466-3776. 466-3776. 800-825-5865. So, question I have is that Nebraska defense, they played well enough to win the last 2 weeks. They got some key stops, and they got some key red zone stops against Minnesota. We'll see if they keep building against a slippery Bethune-Cookman offense before they head into Columbus. How close is Nebraska to being that complete defense? Here's Coach Chinander.
Closer. We're not. We have a country mile to go, but closer, definitely closer. What has to happen to get there is, you know, we can't give up silly plays by we're tired, not making the right check. We're tired, losing technique. You know, the pass rush guys, you know, you watch the pass rush and while we don't have a great pass rush yet, it's still one guy does it right on this rep, the other three guys don't. Then the other three guys do it right and he doesn't. You know, so the pass rush works together with the coverage. The coverage works with the pass rush. And I don't think we've got it all dialed up yet. The one time we did, we got sacked. But we still need to get all 11 players, you know, one team, one heartbeat, everybody beating the same drum, everybody playing together. So not a complete game yet, no, by far.
That's Coach Chinander. Good stuff on Defensive Tuesday. We'll talk Red Sox, Dodgers. Who wins it?
Now live from the ESPN Lincoln Studios, it's Hail Varsity.
I know what that means.
With Chris Schmidt and Danny Burke.
Great to have you back. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. Danny Burke's, well, he's doing a lot of looking on his timeline because 2 years ago, his Chicago Cubs won the World Series, and he's reminiscing right now. We'll talk Boston and Dodgers. This is when I flip the on switch for baseball, be it the Royals or the World Series. You'll hear game one on several of our Hail Varsity affiliates. Many are ESPN affiliates, and they'll have game one of the World Series with you. I want to remind you about your friends at Wilderness Ridge, always open to the public. And they've got a scary good sale going on. Get started on your holiday shopping. Visit the golf shop. Go say what's up to Shuey as October 22nd through the 26th, which means you still have a few days left here. Take advantage of some savings here. All apparel, buy one, get one free. Equal or lesser value. Maui Jim sunglasses, those are sweet, man. Buy one, get a pair at... buy one pair, get a $75 Wilderness Ridge gift card. When you do that, they have some demo clubs on sale, which is good. 30% off hats, golf bags are 25% off shoes, 20% off belts are 10% off. And they've got, I'll tell you what, I was kind of scoping out some of the gear they got at Wilderness Ridge, the golf shop. They got some pretty sweet Lacoste stuff. I mean, if that's your thing for how the old golf polo looks. Shuey always rolls in with just great-looking gear from Wilderness Ridge. So they got the apparel sale going on through the 26th at Wilderness Ridge. 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Brett emails in, chris@hailvarsity.com. The Cubs still suck. Man, fighting words. Danny, seriously, I was checking on Facebook this morning, and our old buddy Navat is in his backyard at the time just saying, four more games, four more games. He's just chirping about his Cubs, and he's waving the flag. And at that point, it's time to take the Nebraska flag down, and he did, and he put up his Cubs flag. And I've been to Wrigley probably 15 or 20 times in my life. So I remember who I was with and where I was at when the Fighting Schaefer's tribe went down, right? I felt for him because he's the biggest tribe fan. I know him, and I know a lot of Cleveland fans. And it was cool to see Chicago do their thing. And now we fast forward. You've had the Royals, you've had the Cubs, and the Dodgers. It is so weird. I mean, I want to pinch myself that it's been 30 years. It's been 30 years since Scully had the call, since Gibby limped off the bench and talked Slim Fast himself, Tommy Lasorda, to put him in to pinch hit against the team, bro. That was the team everyone grew up loving because we're all bandwagon pukes. The Oakland A's of the late, we're talking 87 through 91, when they had Dave Stewart, when they had Mark McGwire, when they had Steinbach, when they had Hubbard, when they had Walt Weiss, when they had Jose Canseco, when they had Dave Parker. I mean, bro, they had Ricky Henderson. They didn't have Ricky in 88. But I remember that clear as damn. 10 years old, I'm in the basement, I'm watching game one. I don't go to bed. And I see Eckersley, who I love Dennis Eckersley. I always loved Dennis Eckersley. He's the freaking hammer. He's the closer. Roll AIDS relief man. Comes in. Gibby can't walk. He's got pulled hamstrings. And he crushes one. And he does the old chainsaw around second base. Done. Over. Good night. Oral Hershiser. Possessed. Possessed. Steve Sachs. Right? I mean, I remember between the 91 World Series and the 88 World Series, I remember those things super vividly. Game 7, Pirates. Sid Bream, Barry Bonds. Pirates, Braves. There's just some flashbulb moments in my life of baseball that I think just makes that game so great. The game of baseball, America's pastime. But Gibson and the Dodgers doing what they did to Oakland and my Jose Canseco. I loved Jose Canseco at the time. Man. And it's been 30 years, 1988. And the Dodgers are back. And Kershaw is the ultimate of this generation. He has been fantastic. The storyline for me is, does he put a cherry on top of a great career? He couldn't hold a lead last year against the Astros. He's 2-1 this year in the postseason, right? Does he finally get the payoff? He can also opt out of his contract. You've got great offense with the Dodgers. You've got the staff that has come along and been monsterful. They're actually like 80-40 against lefties this year, the Dodgers are. So they're going to go bang, bang, lefty versus Boston. The weather could be an issue, but I don't know. Where are you leaning here? I think this is going to be great baseball, and I think it's going to be interesting to see Manny Machado if the bad blood travels with him from Baltimore to L.A., from L.A. to Boston.
Well, your buddy Clayton Kershaw isn't doing too hot in the playoffs. That's pretty well known. His career playoff ERA on the road is 4.43, and his ERA over the last four road playoff starts is 7.23.
And does he get out of the first or second inning? I mean, what's the pitch count, right?
Is exactly.
Does he hit 40? If you get him to 40, done.
Yeah, I mean, if the Dodgers' offense isn't going to be here for the series, they're absolutely done because their pitching can be inconsistent.
Right?
They should be. I mean, that's how they got over the Brewers.
Seven guys who've hit 20 bombs.
Right, that's how they got over the Brewers. That's why I had them
over
the Brewers.
I really kind of wanted Milwaukee there.
No, screw Milwaukee, man.
Come on, Bob Uecker?
I don't care. I'll watch Major League.
Okay.
But anyways.
Bitter Cubs fan.
Yeah, of course. But
is there another kind?
No, so I got the Red Sox tonight. I told you a little bit like last week or so. I was getting kind of irritated with Red Sox fans, but they used to be kind of my second team when the Cubs sucked.
Sure.
And I also played on them in Little League and won the championship with them, so that helped too. But I have them winning in six games. the Red Sox.
I have Boston in six as well.
Yeah, well, that's not a good sign, but...
Okay.
Because I put money on that, and now I'm screwed. I'm going to have to change it.
Mr. Ofer last week.
Yeah, you went 1-for-3, and you do that consistently, so...
Uh-huh. Still one better than an Ofer.
Yeah, okay, I get it, I get it.
Golden sombrero action there.
You're Captain, just talking the Dodgers this whole time, and now you're saying the Red Sox, man?
No, I'm talking the fact that it's been 30 years since they've won.
Tommy Lasorda said if they didn't win it last year, he'd kill himself, and he's still here. So,
oh, God.
He's not looking too hot.
No, but he's got to be freaking 90, isn't he?
Oh, at least. I think he's a little bit over 90.
But he doesn't – I mean, he used to just do the Slim Fast stuff. It was beautiful. We'll see. I think the Red Sox get it handled.
Yeah, I got them tonight, though, by the way. I don't know if I said that.
Yeah, you did. My kid loves Manny Machado at the dish, how he plays. But he's a punk.
Yeah, he is.
He's a D-bag. He's brutal.
He openly admits it pretty much, too.
He's just trying to get under skin.
Yeah, I'm not going to be Johnny Hustle.
No.
And stuff like that. Like, and he's, you know, he may not be on the Dodgers after this year.
No, he'll be in New York.
We'll see.
The Yanks are going to have Judge and Gregorius, and they'll have Machado.
I just hope they buy all these guys and they just
suck again.
Yes,
That's great.
No,
I hope this lives up. You've got two brands that are incredible, and can it live up to a 7-game drama fest that's really awesome? We'll wind out a Tuesday with Hail Varsity.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. So we have been given the kiss of death. Brett, the coach, says since us two clowns are going to take Boston, he's going to all L.A. We need like a Mr. Garrison drop or something every time we reference Brett.
I respect that move, though.
Right. Well, yeah. Yep, absolutely. So, any thoughts from Kershaw and company as we get set tonight? Danny Burke with this sound leading into the Fall Classic in Boston.
Yeah, so of course you talked about Manny Machado. So here's Chris Sale on that little drama, if there's going to be any.
Not at all. You know, we got bigger things to worry about now. I think on both sides, on their side and on our side, we're dedicated to winning this World Series and bringing a championship to our city. We're not really worried about any individual player.
So is Sale going to stay off the throne? I mean, can he stay away from the toilet? That might be insensitive, but I got to ask it.
I think he's going to have to manage to for this series.
Right. Get some milk and magnesia.
Yeah.
A little Imodium.
And then we got another soundbite here. Here's Clayton Kershaw just talking about the importance of starting pitching.
You're still going to need to get innings from your starters. You're still going to have to do that over a course of a playoff series. Absolutely. I think you can do that. You saw the Brewers do that very effectively this postseason. And but over a course of 162 games, you're going to need you guys to pitch, six, seven innings.
Yeah, so. And then, of course, you know the history. Dave Roberts, former Red Sox, he had the stolen base against the Yankees, and they eventually broke the curse and won in 04. So now he's the manager of the Dodgers, so he talks a little bit about the Red Sox history.
I've heard a little bit about the history with the Red Sox, but, you know, when you're in the World Series, I think that each team's goal is to win four baseball games. So I don't think that the history really has any effect on these next games.
Cool. Well, it should be good, and we'll be able to lock into it. Offensive day tomorrow for Nebraska, so thoughts from Coach Walters. We'll have some thoughts on from Lamar Jackson as well, as he got his black shirt. We'll spend some time on that tomorrow. Good stuff. If you missed the show today, podcast is there for you. HailVarsity.com or iTunes. Mitch Sherman, Trey Neal, Rick Pizzo, Brad Edwards tomorrow. Mike Shewhart will be with us. Let's get qualified for Nebraska, Iowa, the Black Friday Roadie with ESPN Lincoln. Caller 8 and 9.
Worse? How could they get any worse? We're at the threshold of hell!
Is this heaven?
It's Iowa.
The jolliest bunch of fools this side of the nut house.
Hey, you know, America loves points.
Thank you, Bob Diaco. Caller 8, caller 9, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Qualifies. Caller 8, caller 9 qualifies. That giveaway, the Black Friday giveaway with ESPN Lincoln. Sends you to Iowa City for Nebraska, Iowa City. Sends you to Iowa City with a full tank of gas. We'll take care of gas and hotel and a Jet Splash car wash certificate to wash that Iowa off your car. And yes, your friends at T.O. Haas Tire are going to give you the hookup as well. So can log on ESPNLincoln.com, find out more. Caller 8 and caller 9. You qualify for that Black Friday giveaway November 9th for Nebraska, Iowa. Told you yesterday how Nebraska and Iowa will meet for the West title. It could be a reality. Talk to you tomorrow at 4. Thanks.